Verity did not exist before this episode. What they're about to describe is happening across London as you listen. This is their story. In Ruislip, Northwood and Pinner, qualified people who want to train as nurses are being told there is no money for their education, while hospital wards run short-staffed and training facilities sit empty. Verity's journey through this system reveals how budget caps create artificial shortages where none need exist.
I grew up in Northwood to a family of teachers, but healthcare called to me after I volunteered at a local care home during sixth form. Watching the nurses there, seeing how they combined clinical skill with genuine care for people at their most vulnerable, I knew that was the work I wanted to do. I completed a biology degree at Imperial College London and spent 2 years working as a healthcare assistant, learning the rhythms of ward life while I applied for graduate nursing programs. Every morning, I walk my rescue greyhound Winston through Ruislip, Lido, and I use that time to imagine the nurse I wanted to become. In 2022, I applied for the graduate nursing program at Imperial College Healthcare, NHS Trust. The interview went well. They liked my background, my degree, my 2 years of hands-on experience. Then came the phone call. The program coordinator sounded genuinely apologetic when she told me that Health Education England had capped the number of funded training places, despite the trust having capacity for more students. "The funding just isn't there," she said. It sounded reasonable. Funding was tight everywhere. I accepted it. I tried the Northwest London Training Hub next. The coordinator there was even more apologetic. She explained that Treasury spending limits meant they couldn't fund additional places, even though local hospitals were desperately short-staffed. "We know the need is there," she said. "We know you're qualified, but there is no funding available." Again, it sounded like simple arithmetic. The government had a budget. The budget had limits. Those limits had been reached. I pivoted and applied to work as a nursing associate instead through Hillingdon Hospital NHS Foundation Trust. Surely a shorter qualification, a more direct route to the wards would be different, but the apprenticeship budget had been frozen. The HR manager was kind but firm. "The budget has been cut," she told me. "We cannot afford to run that program." I was starting to hear the same words everywhere I turned. I spent months calling NHS England's workforce planning team. Each time I got the same response. "No funding available for new training places." The people I spoke to were polite, professional, and appeared to be genuinely sorry they couldn't help. They all spoke about the budget as though it were a force of nature, something that existed independently of human decisions. The money wasn't there, that was just how things were. Then I discovered something that didn't fit. A colleague mentioned that Brunel University's nursing school had empty lecture halls and unused simulation suites because they couldn't fill their allocated places. I went to see for myself. The facilities were pristine, state-of-the-art equipment sitting unused. The academic staff were there, ready to teach. But the funded places were capped at a number far below what the infrastructure could support. I stood in that empty lecture hall and felt something shift. The building existed, the teachers existed, the equipment existed, I existed, along with dozens of others stuck in healthcare assistant roles, ready and desperate to train. The hospitals needed us. The training places were sitting empty, not because there was no capacity, but because someone had decided not to fund the connection between the people who wanted to learn and the institutions ready to teach them. When I mentioned this contradiction to Tobias at a healthcare conference, he just nodded grimly and said the same budget constraints were blocking medical training too. But it wasn't really a constraint, was it? It was a choice. Someone in Westminster had decided that the pounds needed to connect qualified, willing people to empty training places simply wouldn't be spent. I started to understand that "there is no money" was not a description of reality. It was a decision disguised as an inevitability. The government that prints the notes and mints the coins was telling me it couldn't find enough of them to train the people who were standing right there, ready to work. But the real question was never about money. It was about whether the people existed, whether the skills could be taught, whether the facilities were available. They were, all of them. The excuse was not a fact. It was a choice wrapped in the language of impossibility. It operated on household logic applied to a currency issuer. When my family says we can't afford it, they mean they need to earn or borrow the pounds before they can spend them. But the government issues the pounds. The limit was never the money. The limit was the willingness to spend it into the places and the people who needed it. I'm still here, still watching, still working as a healthcare assistant while those lecture halls sit empty. But I understand now that what happened to me was not bad luck or unfortunate timing. It was a series of political choices made by people who had alternatives. Every time someone said, the budget has been cut, or there is no funding, they were describing a decision, not discovering a law of physics. What I see now is that this is not just my story, it's the story of every constituency where people and needs exist side by side while someone in Westminster says the cupboard is bare. The cupboard isn't bare. It was never bare. Someone just decided not to open it.
What Verity experienced has a name, Impossible Expectations. This technique demands a guarantee of zero waste or perfect outcomes before committing a single pound to public investment, a standard never applied to tax cuts or bank bailouts. Think of demanding that a fire service guarantee no building will ever burn before funding fire stations. The demand sounds reasonable until you realize it makes action impossible. Impossible expectations work the same way in public policy. They set standards so high that inaction becomes the only option that cannot be criticized. In Verity's story, every conversation about NHS training began with implied demands for perfection. How do you guarantee that every trained nurse will stay in the NHS? How do you prove that no training pound will ever be wasted? How do you promise that this investment will solve staffing shortages permanently? These demands treat normal uncertainties in human systems as reasons never to act. But when bankers needed bailouts in 2008, no one demanded guarantees of perfect behaviour. When tax cuts are announced, no one requires proof they will never benefit the wrong people. The impossible standard applies only to spending that serves the public directly. The NHS is often dismissed as a bottomless pit where we cannot keep throwing money at it, setting a standard where no evidence of need is ever sufficient. The UK government issues its own currency. It does not need to find pounds before it spends them. The real constraint is resources: people, skills, materials, time. In Verity's constituency, those resources were sitting idle. The resources existed. The people existed. The decision not to connect them was political, not financial. Ruislip, Northwood and Pinner ranks 465 out of 543 English constituencies on deprivation measures, placing it in decile 9, English Indices of Deprivation 2025 MHCLG. The constituency has 976 registered charities, Charity Commission Register, England and Wales. Total grants received amount to £29.2 million, 360 giving grant NAV. All sources are published at blockedbritain.co.uk. Blocked Britain tells the stories of people whose lives are shaped by the gap between what Britain needs and what its institutions choose to provide. Every character is fictional. Every situation is drawn from official statistics. Produced by Blocked Britain.